So great to have you. Thanks for sharing Easter Sunday with us today. You should have received a note sheet on the way in. Online host will direct those of you joining online. You can pull out your notes there and open up to John chapter 20 if you've got a Bible close to you. We're going to be in John 20 and 21. So it was August 11th, 1966. John Lennon gives an interview at the height of the Beatles' popularity and fame. It was a London publication. It approached him. And in that interview, he said the following, quote, "Christianity will go. It will vanish and shrink. I needn't argue about that. I know I'm right, and I will be proved right. We're more popular than Jesus now. I don't know which will go first, rock and roll or Christianity. Jesus was all right, but his disciples were thick and ordinary. It's them twisting it that ruins it for me." Well, the Beatles disbanded in 1970. John Lennon, as many of you know, tragically dies in 1980. Kind of a fanatic fan person took his life. George Harrison died of lung cancer in 2001. So perhaps we need a 58-year update now from his words. Okay, so 58 years later from his quote, he said, "Christianity will go, it will vanish and shrink." So today, in about 190 nations, 2.3 billion people are gathering to stand and proclaim this one central truth. The grave is still empty and we still here. We still here. As popular as the Beatles were, doesn't hold a candle to those who gather in the name of Jesus of Nazareth today. But we need to give John Lennon a little credit in his quote, in that his commentary about disciples is pretty accurate. We're a pretty thick and ordinary group, are we not? And he's saying it's the disciples, because of their ordinariness, and they don't always get it right. They kind of fall on their face and mess things up and twist things around. And, well, that's a commentary on me. That's a commentary on anyone who says yes to Jesus. We're just ordinary people who don't always get it right. And maybe that's some of what brought you here today. Maybe you're a little closer to Lennon and the Beatles' commentary on this whole Christian thing. Maybe you're here quite reluctantly on Easter Sunday. If that's you, I'm so glad you're here, even if you're here reluctantly, even if it was mom or dad or grandma or grandpa who drug you here. Because I'm so glad you're here, because what we're celebrating today can make a difference in your life. Because when Jesus enters the room, resurrection enters the room. And when resurrection enters the room, it changes things. And we're going to look at three stories at the end of John's gospel where he approaches three thick and ordinary people, just very ordinary people. And by approaching them, and they have an encounter with this risen Christ, and it doesn't just change some things, it changes everything about their life. And I believe no matter what you walked in here with or wherever you're joining us from, that today that can happen for you. If it happens for these three, because Jesus is alive, it can happen for you and me today. So John's gospel is one of the four biographies of Jesus. There are four biographies. They're called gospel: Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And at the end of John's account, his biography, he profiles three characters who are in various places of their ordinariness. He looks at Mary Magdalene, and she's covered up under her grief. And then he looks at Thomas, which is what Stephen and Mallory read for us in the teaching text, and he's wrestling through doubt. And then he looks at Peter in John 21, who's buried in shame. So sorrow, doubt, shame, thick and ordinary lives, Jesus comes in his resurrected state, and he approaches us, and in that approach can change some things. So here's John chapter 20. We're going to look at verse 11. This is Mary Magdalene now. She stood outside the tomb, verse 11, the tomb, crying. As she wept, she bent over to look into the tomb and saw two angels in white seated where Jesus' body had been, one at the head and the other at the foot. Now, backstory on Mary Magdalene was she had quite a dramatic encounter with Jesus. If you've watched the Chosen series, the very first episode of season one profiles Mary Magdalene. It's a powerful episode. If you've not started into that, that would be a great next step. For some of you just getting started in your relationship with Jesus or want to learn more about him, just dial up the Chosen series, start season one, episode one, and go. And here's what you have to have. What's your response to what you're witnessing there? Who Jesus is, what he did, what he said, and then what he claims. I've never met anyone like Jesus. That's why I'm all in with him. No one said the things Jesus has said to me. No one's made the claims on my life that Jesus claimed. And no one did what Jesus did. So I'm all in with him. What about you? Mary Magdalene, she was bound up, Luke chapter 8 said, with seven demonic spirits. So she knows about trauma in her life. Her life was difficult, painful. She was lost and broken and hurting. We don't know a ton about her family of origin, but it can tell you probably a really difficult upbringing. And she has this encounter with Jesus in Luke chapter 8, and he sets her free. Jesus starts changing things about her life. She comes to life. He calls her by name. He knows her. He sees her. And she begins to just walk with him and follow him. And she's his disciple. And then she gets to Crucifixion Friday, and she can't process what she's witnessing. It throws her into a place of grief and loss. The Savior of the world, her Messiah, she's given her whole life to follow Jesus. And on Crucifixion Friday, he's executed. And she's just buried under just sorrow and grief and loss. And I thought about so many of you know all about that today. So many of you, Easter 2024, that's exactly where you're at. You're with Mary Magdalene in the garden, covered up under grief and loss. Because some of you said goodbye to a loved one that you can't imagine living without their physical presence. And it's just kind of overwhelmed your life. Or you said goodbye to a marriage that you were convinced was going to make it through the rough times. Or you said goodbye to a career that, honestly, you had kind of pegged to last a lot longer than it lasted. Or you said goodbye to a friendship that just ended in hurt and betrayal and loss. You said goodbye, maybe recently, to a physical body that the doctors are giving you some sobering news that your body that used to do the normal everyday activities just isn't going to be able to do that anymore. And that's where Mary Magdalene is on Easter Sunday. She's got, like, her heart, if you just picture standing at the banks of an ocean and the waves rolling on the shores of an ocean, it's wave after wave of grief and loss that her Savior, her Messiah, her Lord is dead. And she can't even shed any more tears. She's weeping so much. Until resurrection enters the room. Resurrection enters the room. Look at verse 14. She turns around and she sees Jesus standing there. So Jesus comes to her in her grief and her sorrow. But she didn't recognize that it was Jesus. A parenthesis here, that's some of the challenge, you know. Some of you have been around church for a long time and maybe been wrestling with a lot of things. And some of the challenges, all the ways Jesus has been coming to you, but if you were honest, you just haven't recognized it. You haven't seen it. You know, it takes an act of God to seek God. We need God to seek God. And maybe today, maybe Easter Sunday is that breakthrough for you. Maybe this is a eyes open and you say, you know what? I think Jesus has been calling out to me. He's been coming for me. As he's coming for Mary right here. But she couldn't see it. And then she, verse 15, woman, he says, why are you crying? Who is it you are looking for? Thinking he was the gardener. She said, sir, if you've carried him away, tell me where you have put him and I will get him. And Jesus said to her, Mary, Mary, right there. That didn't just change some things. That changed everything for Mary. Like in that moment, it's like, oh, that's my Lord. That's my, he sees me. He knows me. He calls me by name. Mary, I see your whole life. I see your struggles. Remember, I know all about the 1.0 Mary. I know all about it. I know about your reputation. I know about your background. Remember, I see you. I know you. I know your hurts. I know your hopes. I know your struggles. And I call you by name, Mary. Church, you know how powerful it is? The name is so powerful, is it not? Don't you appreciate, can you think of all the times when someone knows your name and how much that meant to you? Or perhaps more poignantly, at least for me, is all the times that I just didn't know the name. I couldn't remember the name. I have this friend in my life who's a Catholic, and they've been 20 plus years we've been friends. And every time I see this friend who I haven't seen, we won't see each other for a few months, and when I see him, he walks up to me and he says, "Father, so good to see you." I'm convinced 20 plus years into our friendship, he thinks I'm a priest in the Catholic Church. I mean, he's close, but I'm just saying, "Father." Or you know how it is in church circles, like when you walk up to someone and we've got kind of a universal language in church when we don't quite, can't recall the name. What's that universal language? "Brother, sister, so great to see you." And while you're doing that, you're like, I can't remember your name. The power of a name. You know, the IRS knows you by your tax ID. You know, your insurance company knows you by your policy number. You know, your state knows you by your driver's license number. Your bank knows you by your account number. But this text reminds us that the sovereign Lord of heaven and earth, he knows you by name. And he calls you by name. He sees you. He knows you. There's about 8 billion people on the planet. 8 billion. And out of the 8 billion, he says, "I know you. I see you. I know everything about you. I know all the stuff you've been open and honest about with others, and I know the stuff you haven't. I know the hopes and dreams that you have, and I know the stuff you've locked away in a closet that you're convinced no one else you're going to speak about." He knows it all, he sees it all, and he calls you by name. And when that happens, what happened to Mary, it happened to you, it happened to me. That when the resurrected Christ walks into the room, resurrection walks into the room, and for Mary, he just lifted, if you look at the rest of the text, as her eyes become open, she gets lifted out of this cloud of like grief and loss, and she begins to see what was an unexpected and unwanted ending on Friday was a threshold into a new beginning on Sunday. She couldn't see it until resurrection walked in the room. And for some of you, in the pain of your difficult ending, today is a reminder that with Jesus on the scene, it can be a threshold to a new beginning. He calls you by name. Even if for the most part you've been ignoring him your whole life, he calls you by name. So he approaches Mary in her sorrow. Secondly, let's look at what he does with Thomas in his doubt. Verse 24 and following, check out this. Now, Thomas, some of your translations call Didymus, do you see that? And as Stephen's translation read, it's translated twin. So it's the idea that Thomas was a twin. And one of the 12 was with him, with the disciples when Jesus came. So he was one when all the disciples were having a heyday around Jesus' resurrection, having all these post-resurrection encounters. Thomas was not in that crowd. So the other disciples told him, "We have seen the Lord." But he said to them, "Unless I see the nail marks in his hands and put my fingers where the nails were and put my hand into his side, I will not believe it." Do you see that? So here's Thomas. He was around Jesus in all of his teachings. He was around and got to see so many miracles. He got to watch Jesus feed the 5,000 and heal the sick and calm the storm. I mean, Thomas had so much like awareness of Jesus and even had some life experiences with Jesus. But he was a guy who just struggled with things. He was kind of what might be considered a late adopter, someone who's a slow processor, someone who likes to think things through, might use the word skeptical at his core. That might be where Easter Sunday finds some of you. Some of you have been around kind of the Christian circles and the church scene. But if you were honest, there's some stuff going on in here that's in the category of Thomas-like doubt and skepticism. You've got some questions about, is Jesus really who he said he was? Did he do what he said he was going to do? Are all these accounts accurate and true? Can I believe it? Why do I believe what I believe? And you're right there with Thomas, and you're trying to sort it all out. And an added challenge is you might be surrounded with all kinds of friends and family members who are just all in with wholehearted belief in Jesus, and you're the one who's kind of feels like a little bit on an island. And you've got some questions, and you've got some doubt, and you've got some skepticism that you're trying to work through. And I want you to notice, just like how Jesus approaches Mary in her sorrow and grief, notice how he comes to Thomas. Don't miss this now. He walks through walls to get to Thomas. He walks into the room. They didn't open the door for him. He just walks into the room to get to Thomas in his doubt. Notice Jesus isn't upset with Thomas's wrestling and his question. Jesus isn't upset with your questions. He's not upset with the stuff you're wrestling around about. He's not upset with your doubt. He's not frustrated that you're maybe a slow processor and all that. That's not Jesus of Nazareth. The vision I want you to have today is Jesus is walking through walls to get to you and your skepticism and doubt. He wants to speak with you. He comes in to Tommy. He says, Tommy, it's time to lay it down. Take a look. It's time to lay it down. Because what he encouraged Thomas to do, if you're really wrestling through some of this stuff, if you're not quite sure why you believe what you believe, you owe it to yourself to do what Jesus pressed Thomas to do. You've got to push through. You got to trace out the doubt. You got to press into the skepticism and questions. You owe it to yourself. There's too much on the line about who you say Jesus is. This is not a back burner topic. You can't just shove this one to the back. You can't pull this out on Easter Sunday and Christmas Eve. Nope. It's too important. You need to wrestle to the ground who you say Jesus is. It's that important. And I want you to get an image today as Jesus is walking through walls to help you wrestle that to the ground. Listen to what A.J. Swoboda says. I put this quote in your notes. To struggle with one's faith is often the surest sign we actually have one. I would say pastorally, the people who are really struggling and wrestling with their faith are the ones, it's like the surest sign, like they're genuinely like they're trying to sort it out because it's a work of God going on in them. Equally so, some who are maybe not interested in God and faith, they're not wrestling around with these things because they really ping their heart to that place. So if you're wrestling, if you're struggling, I'm with Swoboda, I want you to step back and think, could that be a work of God? Could that be Jesus walking through walls to get to you? And Dallas Willard said, follow Jesus. And if you can find a better way than him, he'd be the first to tell you to take it. What's he standing on that? You have to be honest in your pursuit of truth, and we can be confident of this. Like, I believe Jesus is who he said he was. I believe he's the way, the truth, and the life. I believe if you will honestly pursue truth, you're going to end up with Jesus. I'm with Dallas Willard. Follow Jesus. He'd be the first one to tell you if there's something better than him. He knows there's not. He's the truth. Reality is what you run into when you're wrong. And some of what you're running into in your skepticism and your doubt is you're running into the end of yourself and you're running into the end of the answers of this world. And could it be Jesus walking through walls this Easter Sunday to get to you and say, perhaps your skepticism, if you'll stay with it, will go from skepticism to surrender. That's what happens to Thomas. He goes from skepticism to surrender in John 20. Where do you see that? Look what happened in verse 28. It says, Thomas said to him, notice, my Lord and my God. Huh. Do you see it, church? It's the my Lord, my God. no matter how big you think your mountain of doubt is, no matter how big your questions are, they're not too big for the resurrected Christ. He's not intimidated by whatever questions you've got. He's walking through walls to call you from skepticism to surrender, to show you his hands and his feet, to open your eyes to see the way, the truth, and the life. That's what Jesus does. If you'll be honest in your pursuit, and you owe it to yourself to wrestle this to the ground, it's too important. You can't just like ignore it and steer clear from it. You can't do that. There's too much on the line with this. And so I want to encourage you, if you find yourself in this space today, I want you to think about this. I want you to think about how Easter Sunday could be the Sunday when it goes from, notice it's not our family's faith, that it's not our mom or our dad, our grandma or our grandpa, our pastor or our church or our friends, at some point for Jesus to get you to the my Lord and my God. That's a big journey, right? From their Lord and their God to our Lord, our God, my Lord, my God. This could be the day. So you got to wrestle. You got to figure out what you believe about who Jesus said he is and why you believe it. You owe it to yourself. There's that much at stake. It's going to matter 100 years from now. So why not today? Why not decide today? So here's what I want to commend you to. I want to commission you. Take a look at this book. I put a copy of this book up on the screen. Get Swoboda's book, After Doubt. Get a copy of that book. Get a friend, family member, and read through it together. You owe it to yourself to press in on this. He's a good guide for this. It'll help you. So don't just shove it to the back burner. Stick it on the front burner. Work through it. Wrestle it to the ground. I believe you're going to end up where Thomas ended up. My Lord and my God, you're the way, the truth, and the life. I see you now more clearly. So you see, the resurrected Christ comes to Mary in her grief and loss, opens her eyes to see, comes to Thomas, walks through walls to get to Thomas in his doubt, which, by the way, before we transition from Thomas to Peter, let's not forget, if you read the history on what happens to doubting Thomas after this resurrection account, do you know what happens to Thomas? He becomes a missionary and a martyr to the country of India. So, you know what that tells me? Evidently with Jesus, doubters are not a problem in Jesus' discipleship path. It tells me doubters are become like first-round draft picks to become missionaries and martyrs to take the message to the ends of the earth. Some of you who are wrestling with some big stuff, perhaps you're going to be the next Thomas to go to the ends of the earth with the very thing you're trying to work through right now. And Jesus is walking through walls to settle that from skepticism to surrender. So we got one more to look at. Because Jesus walks up to another man named Peter. Do you see that in John 21? He goes to Peter in John 21. And for Peter, here's what he does with Peter in John 21. Peter goes back fishing. Do you know why he goes fishing? Because that's what fishermen do. Where did last Peter encounter Jesus? What was he doing the last time he and Jesus were hanging out? Was Jesus say, I surrender all to thee, I freely give? I believe you. I'm all with you. If you know your Bibles and the storyline of the account, the last time Peter and Jesus hung out, Peter denies him not just once, twice, three times, and the rooster crows. If you go to the Holy Land, there's the church that's built with St. Peter, and it's got a crowing rooster on top of the cross to remind the story. This is that Peter. Peter just, he's covered up in shame. He's like, oh, I failed. I did the very thing I vowed I'd never do. I violated my values. He's the one who told Jesus he would never leave him. And then not only once, twice, three times, he's out. And so he kind of self-selects. He's off team Jesus. He's going back fishing. And Jesus goes to the shoreline, and he calls out to Peter and John on the waters, and he calls out to them. He sees Peter in his shame. He sees him in his guilt. And some of you feel that right now. This Easter Sunday finds some of you covered up with so much shame, so much guilt, so much regret. You've made some decisions this past year that you just, you can't get out from under. You can't believe you did what you did. You can't believe you said what you said. You can't believe you violated what you violated. And you're just buried like Peter in John 21. And shame is all over you. Guilt, regret, and you're just covered. You can't hardly see out. It's just covered up so much. And you know, that's how shame works. I put in your notes. Did you see what I put in your notes about shame there? Shame will tell you what you know is true, but it doesn't fully apply to you. That's what shame says. Shame says there's nothing you can do to recover from what you've done. That's what shame does. It just wants to keep you buried under that. It says you can't do anything. But this weekend says Jesus walks to you in your shame. He's the one who's got an answer. What you do with your shame, what you do with your guilt, what you do with your regret, what you do with your failure, you bring it to the feet of this resurrected Christ, and he can do something about it. Jesus is the only one I've met that can deal with the stuff in here in my life, in the inmost place. He said, Peter, I'm coming for you. I'm coming for you. If you know the story in John 21, he goes, calls out to him. Peter jumps out of the boat and swims toward Jesus. It had to be the most, like, can you imagine the tears in that swim? Can you imagine the passion in that swim? He's swimming. He knows it's Jesus, and he's just thinking, he just throws him. I'm just picturing that scene on the beach when he just throws himself soaking wet into Jesus' chest. And Jesus says, let's have breakfast. Sits down and has a meal together, and then he reinstates Peter. You see, Peter couldn't see beyond his failure and his shame, but Jesus could. Do you think Peter could have ever imagined after the threefold denial, I'm off, after that moment, I'm off team Jesus? Do you think he'd ever say, okay, 190 nations, St. Peter's Cathedral. You're going to be the rock upon which I build the church. I'm sure he left all of that under the pile of shame. And Jesus sees through all that, and catch this now. On that beach, in that moment, as he reinstates him, three times he asks him, do you love me? Because three times he denied him. Jesus' threefold reinstatement for his threefold denial. Because in this moment, Jesus is saying to Peter what he says to me and you. It's not our history or our current reality, but it's our destiny that's to be the grounds of our identity. It's not about what you've done, it's about what Christ has done. It's not about your record, it's about Christ's record. It's not about your past, it's about Christ's past. That's the core of the story. He said, Peter, I see it all, I know it all. I was there, I was an eyewitness to the whole scene, and I'm not done with you yet. And so some of you come in and you are so buried in shame and guilt and regret for what you've done. You're right here with Peter in John 21. And this is the moment in Peter's journey. Jesus reinstates him and says, hey, Peter, it's not what you've done. It's not where you are right now. It's who you're becoming. It's not who you've been. It's who you're becoming. And for some of you, that's the story of your life. And maybe it's Easter 2024. Ask Mary Magdalene. Jesus just walks up to her in her grief and loss and opens her eyes and lifts that cloud, and she can begin to see. Jesus sees something in Mary Magdalene she can't see in herself. And then he walks through walls to get to Thomas in his doubt. He sees Thomas to be this missionary and martyr for the gospel in India. Do you think Thomas could see that? Thomas is just trying to struggle with, I'm not sure I believe Jesus is risen. And Jesus has got a mission and a call in his life. Says, you're actually going to go to the ends of the earth in my name. So it isn't about his history, it isn't about his current reality, it's about his destiny. And then same with Peter. From denier to, as you, if you read through the New Testament, this history records Peter was crucified upside down because he didn't feel worthy to die in the same manner as Jesus. There's not a blip on Peter's screen after this one. It's up and to the right with his devotion and commitment, eventually giving his whole life. So what do you say? How do you respond to these three very thick and ordinary lives? They encounter the resurrected Christ, and it changed everything about their life. And this text says what happened to them can happen to you and me today. So worship team, why don't you come on back up?
I got one final story, and then we're going to lead through a time of prayer together.
April 1888, Alfred Nobel. Here's a picture of Alfred Nobel. He had a very disturbing experience. He was sitting reading the morning paper and read his own obituary. How would you like that for your morning coffee? It was as strange to him as it was us thinking about it right now. The paper says he had died. So how did that happen? Well, his brother Ludwig had died, but the paper had misunderstood which one of the brothers died. And back in that day, they had prepared a fair amount of the obituary for that day when it was going to come, and so they printed Alfred's obituary instead of Ludwig's. And he sat there and he read this legacy while he's still alive. And can you imagine that moment? And here's what he heard. This is some of the comments from the obituary. Here's the actual wording. The merchant of death is dead. Ooh, how'd you like that to be read at your funeral? It condemned him for inventing dynamite and other explosives that were notoriously fueling destruction all around the world. It cast him as a money-hungry, immoral man who made a fortune selling weapons and blowing stuff up. They celebrated his death. His obituary was celebrating the fact he was gone. Well, as you might imagine, Alfred Nobel was overcome with what I want to call a sobering clarity about his legacy. What am I giving my one and only life to? So he lives 8 more years, and he makes some big changes in those 8 years. To the point where when he dies, they actually don't celebrate his death, they actually mourn his death 8 years later. In his final obituary, it said nothing about the merchant of death. Instead, it spoke about Alfred Nobel, the philanthropist. In his will, he gives away 94% of his fortune to a sequence of prizes that celebrate all of the great works in physics and chemistry, physiology, medicine, literature, etc. And most ironically, it celebrates the work of peace. The one who made all his money making explosives and dynamite. So the merchant of death became known as the founder of the Nobel Prize. Alfred Nobel. And so, church, perhaps one of the gifts of Easter morning today is obituary-level clarity. This is a good moment to pause and to think, if I continue on the path that I'm on, where does this road lead? That would be a really wise thing to think through. If I just run the tape out, where's this road going? Get all the way to the end and picture yourself sitting, and if you had the opportunity to kind of read, what will those who love me and know me, what will they stand up and say about my one and only life? What am I spending it on? What am I contributing it for? What legacy am I leaving? And Easter reminds us this is a day to think about what's going to matter 100 years from now. It's going to matter who you say Jesus is. And maybe he's walking into your grief today. You're Mary Magdalene, and he's coming to you in your grief and loss. Maybe you're Thomas and your skepticism and doubt. He's coming to you. He's walking through walls to get to you. Or maybe you're Peter, just buried in your shame, all the regret stuff. He's coming for you. Resurrection enters the room, he can open your eyes and he can help you see it's not about where you've been, but it's about where you're going. And you link up with the resurrected Christ, I promise you, you're not going to say, you're not going to be disappointed in that decision. I promise you, you're going to be surprised, because he's got plans you know not of. But his plans and his purposes, nothing compares. So at the end of this song, I'm going to lead through a prayer and give you an opportunity. First group I want to pray for is those of you who've never made a decision to say yes to Jesus. You maybe have been around Christian circles, around a Christian family, but you know in your heart of hearts it's never been personal for you. I want to pray a prayer where you can make it personal today. Today could be the day of salvation for you. That Jesus walks through walls to get to you today.
And then the second group I want to pray for is I want to pray for those of you who today is a day of returning. As anyone who knows me well will know, I often will say, because I'm in a fair amount of conversation with people who kind of have been gone for a while, let's just say. Sometimes people will introduce themselves on days like today to me and say, "Hey, Pastor Eric," they tell me, "I'm a CEO. I said, "Oh, okay, CEO. We got a lot of business leaders here. Great to meet you." He says, "No, I'm a CEO. I'm a Christmas, Easter only." It doesn't have to be that way. I'm glad you're here. But Jesus has a lot more than CEO kind of followership for you. And today, maybe today, the muscle you work, I want to pray for you is you come back. You know in your heart of hearts, He's the way, the truth, and the life. You know He's a good and generous and gracious God. You know He's shown up in your life. You know it. But if you were honest, it's been buried under some distraction, perhaps some selfishness, perhaps some other hidden sins, whatever. And you've been off in a distant country. And today, it's time to come home. I want to pray for you. And then the last group are those of you who are home and you're seated under the base of this cross and you're filled with a resurrection joy. And I want to pray for those of us in that space to be commissioned to go into a world that's longing for a message that says hope lives, that light expels darkness, that the way things are not the way they have to stay. I want to pray for that group. And so the team's going to lead through a song here, and I want you to really dial into the lyrics, but there's a particular line in the song that I wrote in my notes, and I feel like this is for someone today. It says, "Once I was broken and you loved my whole heart through." That can be for you today. Loved my whole heart through. That lyric, that can move from just a lyric in a song to a reality in your life today. Because Jesus rolls a stone away, He walks out of the grave, and He comes to me and you just like He came to Mary and Thomas and to Peter. He'll meet us right where we are. And don't you love the whole imagery of this storyline? Is long before any of them were looking for Jesus, He comes looking for them. Isn't that our story? Long before you ever started looking for Him, guess who was tracking you down? He's looking for you. And maybe you in this seat or you on the other side of that screen, maybe today is the day that it becomes crystal clear. Jesus has been looking for me. And if you'll just turn, I promise you'll never regret it. I also promise you'll be surprised at what He's got for you, but I promise you're never going to regret it. It'll be the single most important decision of your life. So let this song prepare you for a decision moment. Because I think some decisions need to be made today. Amen.